Hello and welcome to Speaking Of, conversations on voice, speech, and identity with me, Ryan O'Shea. Each episode, I'm talking with a guest who has a real question about voice, speech, or presence. Then I'm guiding them through concepts and exercises to help them, and you, understand a bit more about their question. In this episode, I'm joined by my friend, Tim Murray. Tim is a comedian, writer, actor, podcast host, teacher, improviser, singer. He's such a talented man. Tim is also a gay man, which is relevant to the question of today's episode. Was James Corden's portrayal of a gay man in the movie The Prom really so bad? We talk about accents, about whether there's such a thing as a gay voice or gay accent, and why Tim thinks that James Corden's portrayal was offensive, to say the least. It's another great conversation on the intersection of voice, speech, and identity. So let's get into it. All right. Hello.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Tim Murray. It's always my favorite to like, we pretend like we're just seeing each other, even though we're literally looking at each other, have been in the room, quote, together, but the
fully
like the podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And now it's like, so what are you up to?
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, it's for the benefit of my many, many listeners, yes, to create this illusion that we're just friends, just immediately seeing each other or hearing each other in this moment, same moment that they are.
The here and now, we saved it all up. And sorry, as long as we're continuing with the illusions, I guess I should say we're saving it all up for you guys.
Oh, Tim. Tim. This voice. So this is a little preview for what we're going to be discussing today. Before we get into that, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm gay. I started as an actor. I met you doing summer stock.
Yeah.
I actually was just talking about the Huron Playhouse on another podcast about... My friend Anna Roisman has this really fun podcast about jobs you've had, and I was talking about how much fun that was, because this was in 2007. That's when we met. It was literally the best time of our lives.
I had just turned 21. Not that that really mattered where we were having summer stock. Like, I could have probably been drinking if I were 17, but...
I had just turned 19, and I got my fake ID taken away.
I was there when that happened.
That was lit. That was really, really fun.
Yeah, it was a coming of age summer. It was a coming of age summer.
It really was. Yeah. That was around the time when I decided, okay, I need to stop pretending to be other people. Maybe acting isn't the only path for me, as I was pretending to be whoever that man was on the ID I was using to get into some gay bar in Ohio. So I started as an actor, and I went to the University of Miami and got my BFA in acting there. And also have always been really obsessed with musical theater. So even though I was an acting major, I did a lot of musical theater and did a lot of like theme park performing, singing and dancing, and a lot of musical theater post-college until had always been doing sketch comedy and improv while doing that stuff, and I've always loved comedy. And then when I turned 30, I just dove kind of headfirst into doing stand-up, and that's now most of my bread and butter. And yeah, and I also have a podcast called Slumber Party, where I interview comedians about their sleepover experiences growing up.
It's such a delightful podcast. I want to plug it again at the end so people know how to find you. But like, it's just so joyful. And I think there's not a lot of comedians, I think, that are like as playful, but like still uplifting as you are. And you are playful and hilarious, but you still try to uplift people, which we need in this very, very hard world that we live in. So I just love it. And I think everyone should listen and laugh and smile. Smile.
Thank you. That means so, so much to me. And you've always been so supportive of me and of the podcast. And I hope you know I really appreciate it, because as you know, it's really, really hard to make a podcast. It's really, it's a lot of work. And I think I'm glad you brought that up, because as a comedian, I have a lot of sort of insecurity around that, because, you know, I think the idea of what comedy is like, you think like a roast, you know, when someone's like kind of being a dick, and comedians sort of have a reputation for being depressed and angry and all of these, and all those multitudes exist within me, believe me.
Sure.
I had a hard time with it, with the podcast during the start of the pandemic, deciding whether I was even going to keep going. And I was like, I think I'm too sensitive for this. Like, people had been saying some nasty things, and I had been thinking some nasty things about myself and whether or not, basically my podcast partner decided not to keep going with me. And I was having this feeling of like, I don't think I'm good enough to do this alone. I don't think anyone's going to want to listen. And she was like, well, what if that's your thing? Like, what if you are a sensitive comedian? Why does that have to be a bad thing? And
yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah. I can just be nice and be funny. And that's actually kind of unique right now.
Yeah. And just, again, it feels like something I look forward to, instead of like, I'm laughing in spite of like how terrible things are. But anyway.
Thanks. Yeah. I think it's fun to keep it, to try, especially right now. It's like, all I want to do is have these people, is feel like you're in the living room with these people playing slumber party games, because everybody needs an escape.
Yeah. And slumber parties are illegal right now. So it's it's great to do it via a podcast.
Unless
illegal.
You're a gay man who wants to go to Puerto Vallarta and have the time of your life.
Colonialism. Okay, so I want to paint a picture for our listeners. So if everyone remembers, it's been a few months now that the prom, right? The musical that was adapted into a film. It's on Netflix. It's a Ryan Murphy joint. And I was watching The Prom, I think the same, like a day or two after it came out. So pretty quickly. And I was watching it the same time that you were watching it, Tim. And I remember going through your Instagram stories, and you looked like, showed James Corden, his character, on the screen, and then you turned the camera to yourself and went, "Those S's." And I laughed so hard, because you watch it and you go, okay, James Corden, we get it. You are playing a gay man. And so there's been lots of conversations around this. I want to start by hearing from you, from your perspective, not just as a gay man, but as an actor, a performer. What are your feelings around his being cast in this role, and then maybe the specificities, the choices that he made in playing this role? That's a bunch of questions, but, you know, run.
There's
with
a
it.
Bunch to talk about. Yeah. With this, I mean, my mind bounces back and forth around so many things, because this conversation is not new, right? Like, should people who don't represent a certain group be playing a role that they don't represent in life, I think is a big conversation everybody's been having lately. And I have always felt like tepid waters about it. Like, I've always felt a little bit like, I don't really care. Like, if they're good, then go for it. Like, you know, and I'm not the authority on this. Like, any, you know, queer people can have their experience. And I want to make very clear, I'm not saying that about everything. I'm specifically talking about gay people playing gay roles. Like, trans people need to be playing trans roles. People of color need to be representing their race in the characters that they're playing. With gay people, I always was kind of like, I don't know, Stanley Tucci is great in Devil Wears Prada. He's a convincingly gay to me. He's so committed to that. Now, there are two things that have completely changed my mind around that. One is that gay men specifically, and gay women too, honestly, and non-binary people are not afforded the same opportunities. We are not often able or asked to play straight characters because there's so much misogyny in the world, I think, is what happens with gay men. People don't like femininity. In general, it's like a lot of people are afraid of it and a lot of people don't champion it the way that they should, even though I think it's like a really powerful thing. So seeing a gay man be femme is disgusting still to many people. So that's one side of the problem, that gay actors aren't allowed to play straight still. So it's not working both ways. My big issue that I've taken with it in the last, I would say, couple years, where I'm like, yeah, this really has to, I'm really sick of this now at this point, is that they are very bad at it. That's always my thing. Like, again, like, you watch Stanley Tucci and you're like, yeah, he's playing a role. He has some affectation, but mostly he's being Stanley Tucci, and the character he has to play is gay, so he's not putting that much on top of it. He's bringing the humanity to that character. When you have somebody like James Corden, he is not good at playing gay. Period, point blank, the end. Anyone who thinks that he is, and if you are a gay person who thought, oh, I wasn't offended by that performance, I thought it was good, I would honestly ask you to reflect on that longer and harder and think about what it means to you to be gay and what it sounds like and what it looks like and what your community is like, because I don't know anyone that sounds like that. I know extremely effeminate gay people. I am one of them. A lot of us slur our S's. A lot of us have sibilant S's, but nobody sounds like the bully on the school bus who made fun of us by making that voice. Like, it's not lived in. It's not from a voice and speech perspective, from an acting perspective. It's not dropped in. He was commenting on it. He wasn't committing to it. So
can you give, I 100% agree with you. And I'm, if I were more high tech, I would like play a sample right now and say, tell me, can you analyze this a little bit? Mm-hmm. But even just going from memory, can you give some examples of some ways in which he was, I would say, generalizing this gay voice, gay accent, right? What were some things that you noticed that felt like lazy choices?
I will say, I don't know if lazy is the right word, to be honest, because I mean, he was trying really hard. I would venture to guess he was trying too hard. He just isn't, he is not immersed in the culture. Like, I always say, like, if you're going to learn Spanish, it's harder to do that from trying to do it yourself from Rosetta Stone, which is what it felt like he did. Like, he listened to some gay people he knew or watched some videos and then did it wrong by commenting on it rather than committing to it. You got to immerse yourself in this culture. We know how we sound because we are living and breathing it every day and experiencing it every day. He didn't study abroad in gay culture. He clearly like watched some videos and tried to mimic. And I would say the biggest obvious one is the insanely prolonged S's that were there where they didn't. And the thing is, you can have a really sibilant S and have a stunning and very great gay voice that represents who we are. But he didn't commit to them. They felt like a joke. And they weren't, like I always say to my acting students, it feels like you're giving like a 6 out of 10 or a 7 out of 10. If he had committed to it to a 10 out of 10, it might have worked. But also at the end of the day, don't make that choice, you idiot. Like, what? Like, why do that? This person can be effeminate and gay, and he could have just been James Corden. Like, he shouldn't have been cast, period, point blank, the end. It should have been Nathan Lane or Titus Burgess. But had he just been himself in the way that Stanley Tucci brings himself to a role, it would not have been nearly as offensive. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. Do you think, I have my own thoughts, but I'm curious about your thoughts. Do you think that there is a And even saying A implies that there's one. Do you think that there is an accent that exists, or multiple accents that exist within gay communities? Is there a gay accent?
Oh, that's a good question. How do you define accent? Like, what is an accent?
Yeah, I would love to answer that question. I think, first of all, I'm coming back to whenever I am analyzing any accent, whether that is sometimes I have clients, or I do workshops where people are coming to me saying, I have to sound British. Well, okay, there's a ton of British accents. Let me see the script. Let's see what the sides say. And then from there, I'm going to home in on region, certainly. Okay, it says this takes place in London. Great. And then I'm going to look at what does it tell me about the character? Okay, they are white, or they are black, or they are Indian. And so there might be some ethnic things that come into there. Certainly, if it said if it said something about their sexual orientation, not that I would try to then make a choice about like, I'm going to make up these characteristics, but I would want in my research of that accent, I would want to include actual speakers who are part of these various communities. So if I'm doing, for example, a gay black person from London, and it's a contemporary piece, then I'm going to be looking for gay black London speakers, because our accents are our identity. And the various communities that we belong to, certainly regionally, but also the communities and how we code switch within those communities, there are similarities that show up within communities.
Yeah.
Within those accents, there's really four areas that I, as an accent coach, look at. And this is all from Knight Thompson speech work, the methodology that I am trained in and teach. Cultural context, who are the people who speak this accent? When we're talking about, obviously, is there a gay accent? It's mostly going to be looking at gay speakers. Then we have posture. Is there anything that's changing about the shape of their articulators, how they're using their jaw, their lips, their tongue, their larynx, even the different shapes? Am I changing anything about that? Then there's pronunciation, right? The S is a choice that James Corden made, right? And then we have musicality being the final one. I do think that there are within any community, you could probably find some similarities with it. But there's not, in the same way that it doesn't make sense to say, I would like to learn the American accent, Ryan. Like, okay, I will teach a lot of the features that tend to show up in multiple American speakers. But there's no such thing as one American accent. There's no such thing as one gay accent.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
American.
Actually, I'm thinking of, I have a very good friend who is Scottish and gay. And whenever he would impersonate me in my American accent, he would go like this. And he would do like this kind of thing. That to me, I would hear it and go, well, that's a stereotype of either a really dumb girl or a super gay man. A stereotype. Right. I don't know anybody that actually speaks like that at all.
People in the UK love to do that. They love to be like, I'm American.
Yes.
Like, we're not all from the Valley. Like, what?
And I know people from the Valley who don't sound like that either.
Who don't sound like that. Yeah. It's so funny to me. That's really interesting. Yeah. I guess I've never thought of it that way. I mean, there is obviously something real about gay men. That's the only thing I can speak to, because that's my experience, having an identifiable voice, right? Like, you know, ever since I was a little kid, like people would say, you talk like a girl. There is something to that. But what is interesting about it is there are many different types of gay men. You know, there are very masculine gay men who would have a much lower and deeper voice. And there are gay men who have a much more effeminate voice than I do. And so it really does kind of, it's hard to, I guess, pin down. Because also the other thing about that is we live all over the world. So the regionalisms are totally different. And like the vowel sounds are completely different. But it's interesting what you said about musicality, because that is very true. Like if you watch Drag Race in America, everybody has a not everybody, that's a generalization, but a lot of the queens have a similar musicality to the way that they speak as the queens in the UK, even though they have totally different regional accents.
And the queens in like Drag Race Holland, like they're speaking in Dutch. And yet, like, you hear, there's still the, like, yes, and those, like, the upward inflection and that kind of thing that you do hear across the board in certain moments. It's not, I think code switching is such an important thing to reference because we all code switch. And especially, I do think when you come from a community that is oppressed, your code switching becomes
about safety.
Sometimes, yeah, absolutely. And that, that my when I'm most, you know, when I'm most quote feminine, right? Like where I'm really in my high pitch and that kind of thing. That's usually in the moments where I'm with my closest friends or I'm with my husband, where like I feel very comfortable and I'm letting myself be seen in this way. But I would not put on that part of my voice. It is a part of my voice. I wouldn't put on that part of my voice with everyone because I know that some people would then not respect me as much, or I think anyway, I suspect that people will not respect me as much, or they will not take me seriously. They will not assume that they will not believe that I'm intelligent, right? When you talk about a gay person, your ability to code switch and sound, quote, more straight becomes, the stakes are much higher. The stakes are much higher. It could be about survival. It could be more like my bosses are homophobic and I will not advance in my career if they think that I don't have the gravitas to speak in this accent. So code switching feels like an important thing to mention, that that exists in every community, every culture, every ethnicity, and so forth.
It's very important, I think, because it really circles back to our earlier conversation about the same privilege is not afforded to us. Like James Corden is quote unquote code switching into being a feminine gay man in that movie. And that's like so painful to us because we have to code switch in our real lives for survival and safety. Like I can't get into an Uber without the trauma that I experienced as a kid hitting me in my brain and making me go, hey, yeah, could you just take me to whatever street? Like without being myself. Like I don't answer the phone like myself. I answer the phone like a masculine, what the me mimicking like what a straight man was from the people I grew up with in Ohio for all the reasons that you said. And I think a lot of people have to deal with that, not just gay people. Like you said, like a lot of black people have had to deal with code switching because of the deep racism in this country. And so I think that's the point of the conversation, right? Is like, it really sucks to see you smother your privilege in our face in that way and just kind of be so off in representing us, so wrong, because it really does, I think, embolden other straight people to do that voice, thinking that they are being funny or having fun. And it's the thing is, my thing as a comedian is you truly can get away with anything if you're good enough at it. And point blank, bottom line is he wasn't good enough at doing that voice or playing a gay man. His physicality wasn't good enough for him to pass with his quote unquote code switching. If I don't even know if you can call it that, if it goes in reverse like that, but whatever. He wasn't passing to me as a gay man. It was offensive because it was not good. So to me, it's the same as if somebody's going to tell a joke and the joke objectively doesn't make most of the room laugh. Well, if enough people in here aren't laughing, if, you know, more than half the gay community is saying that sucked, then you missed the mark.
Yeah, and I love that when I said lazy, you said, I don't think it was lazy. I felt like he was working really hard, right? Like that physically and what he was throwing into it felt like, woof, he was, yeah, efforting, right? For me, the reason I said lazy, and it makes me think of... this is a conversation I have with anybody putting on an accent, like a version of this conversation. Have you seen Ted Lasso?
Mm-mm.
It's a charming show, but Jason Sudeikis plays white man from the South. And so that's actually not written into the character at all. I find it very strange that his character, the last thing they talk about is that he lived in Kansas and that he comes in and he does this accent. And then it's just kind of general white guy from the South. And it's not written into the character. I know many people from Kansas and not one of them has a version of that accent. I've no doubt that they're, you know, Missouri's right next door. That there are parts of it that there could be like more of perhaps like a harder R, that kind of thing that happens. But it just felt so strange to me and then so lazy. The difference for me, and I think this is what you're alluding to, no Southern white guys were harmed in Jason Sudeikis doing this general portrayal. He is a white guy playing another white guy. While I don't think that it was particularly interesting or necessary even, nobody was harmed by it.
Right.
And you saying, we can laugh at this, we can make fun of this, but that it's actually painful for you to watch a performer who has the privilege of moving through the world as a straight person, as a cisgender white man, and on the amount of privileges that he has, to put on this accent and it be, isn't this fun? Isn't this play? This is so silly. When that is not, that's something that you have to sometimes protect and guard and be very careful when you allow yourself to express that part of your voice. That's when it feels like it's cultural appropriation, like, yes. Done badly.
Done very badly. And I think it's so harmful because it's not just about the movie. It's not about like an actor playing this role. It's about what this representation to going out into so many TVs across the world, how that ripple effect affects us in our real lives, not just in show business. Like it's so, like I said earlier, it emboldens people. And have you seen the movie Disclosure on
not
Netflix?
Not yet. It's on my list. Yeah.
It's unbelievably so good. But in the movie Disclosure, it's all, for those of you listening, is about trans representation in the media or the lack thereof for throughout the last several decades. And Jen Richards, I think her name is, puts it so brilliantly about trans representation that she says something to the effect of, I think that when cis people have played trans people in the media, it's a direct link to the violence that happens to trans women specifically, but to all trans people. Because when a cis person is sitting at home watching their buddy pretend to be trans, not watching their buddy, but watching an actor, that reminds them of their buddy, their straight cis buddy down the street. So it helps them to dehumanize the trans experience. So you're not seeing a trans person playing trans. You're not seeing this as real. When you watch James Corden doing that, you're not seeing a real gay person. You're seeing someone make fun of what it means to be a gay person. Mm. And that is so dehumanizing. And as we know, when you dehumanize people, that's how you justify being violent toward them. Mm. And like, for those of us who were like alive during the Matthew Shepard thing, that hasn't left us. That will never leave us. So the idea that straight men took a gay guy and murdered him because of how effeminately gay he was being is, you know, deeply, deeply wounding to us. And the amount of times that I have been told that I am, quote, too gay, not just by straight people, but by other gay men to play a role. Or one time an agent in New York City straight up told my voice teacher I was too gay to take an appointment with. And I firmly believe that this all contributes to that. It's like, yeah, if we're not actually celebrating what it means to be a femme gay person, then we're always going to have this problem. You know, Sean Hayes, when he was on Will and Grace, didn't come out until I think several years into the series, because he was getting so many death threats from people because he was authentically portraying what it looks like to be a femme gay person on TV. It's like,
and enjoying himself. We were seeing him be joyful in that. Yeah.
Yeah. We so rarely get to see gay people be joyful. It's so often a really depressing story about coming out or something bad happening to them because they're gay. And the prom, I saw the prom on Broadway, and it was so, so funny and so beautiful and just so awesome to see so many queer characters. And the prom, the movie, did a great job of same thing as what it did on Broadway, representing many different gay characters. It's always very cool to see more than one person. And okay, to bring up Eric McCormack on Will and Grace, I'm not offended by that performance because he's being himself. Do I wish that that was a gay actor who was given that opportunity? Yeah. Do I think it would be better and funnier if it was a gay actor? Absolutely. Which is always my point. This James Corden role would have been much better had it been Nathan Lane, Titus Burgess, whoever.
I can't stop thinking about Titus Burgess in that role and how amazing he would be in that.
Funny. And the singing, imagine.
Yes.
Him singing those songs.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I feel ripped off at this point. Yeah. I think it's also, you know, something that I want to go back to. While I do think that various communities have features that show up across the board, right? Like, probably people could hear my voice and go, yeah, I think that that's a white woman, right? And then you could probably make some other guesses about my education level, my career even, right? Based on how I sound. But not everybody who has similar pronunciation features, similar musicality, oral posture, and so forth, has to be a white person, right? This is a conversation that I had in a couple past episodes. I did an episode with my friend Brandon Piper, who you know.
I love Brandon.
And he, yes. And so he was asking why he is a black man and a gay man, and he was asking, why is it that people make assumptions about race based on how they sound? And I was quoting from a book called Word on the Street that's written by a linguist who is also a black man, who was saying there is a black accent. There is. And I was sharing this and going, yeah, you probably can often tell when you listen to someone speaking whether or not they are black or white and so forth. And then the next episode was a colleague named Rachel Finley, who is a voice and speech teacher and a black woman. And her voice, her accent sounds a lot like mine. We have very similar pronunciation features. And she came on and said, actually, I don't think that we should call it the African-American vernacular of English. I think we should call it the so-called African-American vernacular of English because not every person that is Black and American sounds like this. And not every person that has this accent is Black. There are other people who grew up in, like Awkwafina is a good example of people who grew up in very like dense cities where their friend groups are very diverse. So they are around people with different voices so that their accent is influenced by that. I have moments where part of my code switching is that I become extra camp and playful and like, hello, and play, right? And that is a quote unquote, like gay stereotypical feature, right? But that's just me being playful, right? So point being that not every, while there might be, while there definitely are similarities of things that you hear in gay men in America and then same in the UK and Holland and so forth, right? While there might be similarities that exist in gay communities around the world, that does not mean that you must have these features in order to be gay any more than you have to speak in the African so-called African-American vernacular of English in order to be Black. Those things are just not, they don't have to go together.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes full sense. And yeah, I think it's hard because there's several different types of people in every group. Like we were saying, like there's many different examples of many, you know, we all contain multitudes, and it makes perfect sense that you would be, you know, speaking with like a femme, gay, male affectation because you have a lot of gay male friends. For those listening, a lot of you're gonna be shocked by this, but a lot of gay men do theater.
Actually, that was like the biggest shock of moving to Los Angeles, that most of the male actors I know here are not gay. And like my whole experience growing up in doing theater was that like every boy I knew was a gay boy.
Gay.
Every yeah. boy. Yeah.
I know. It's wild. It's wild out here.
Yeah. I shouldn't say most actors. There's just a lot more straight male actors that I know in Los Angeles than I've ever known anywhere else. So they exist too. And we should be talking about them more.
Representation matters.
Yeah. I really appreciate your perspective and that they're, you know, with your sensibilities, that you are kind of poking fun of that accent, but that you're bringing it back to the reality that this is not as simple as it wasn't very good, or like I didn't think it was very effective as a performance, that's real, but bringing it back to the real harm that is done whenever we don't take care in how we cast, whether we decide to take roles that are appropriate for us or not. And if we do decide that we're going to take those roles, the care that we take around making that performance as authentic, as thoughtful as possible, and that ultimately that's what your problems are around.
Yeah, my whole thing in life, like I said earlier when we were talking about my podcast, I'm a very sensitive person, but I'm not a very serious person. My whole thing in life is I just want to have fun. And his performance was so offensively bad that it was more fun to me to make fun of it than it was to just take it in. Also because I have a gay boyfriend who was like deeply, deeply bullied by straight guys in junior high, and he was having like a really intense reaction to it where he was and we both saw The Prom together on Broadway, and he was like, I'm really having a hard time with this, and not in a fun way. So my whole thing in life is like, life is so short. I want to laugh, I want to have fun, and he made that very difficult in that movie. It wasn't fun because, again, it wasn't lived in. It wasn't good. And I think around the conversation of who should be playing these roles, if you are an actor offered a gay role and you are straight, I mean, honestly, there's almost no work for anyone right now. I'm not going to sit here on a podcast and sit on my high horse and be like, no, you shouldn't take that role. Like, you know, do what you have to do to pay your bills. And truly, like, you doing a play at the Santa Monica Playhouse is probably not going to have this kind of widespread effect. So I'm not saying, like, you, if you're a straight person, you should be turning down these roles necessarily. Also, it's not your fault. It's casting and the director's fault. Like, actors are so helpless. We are so, like, we don't have very much power at all. James Corden, on the other hand, is a very powerful person in show business, and he didn't need this role. He's got a pretty steady gig, I would say.
He's doing okay.
So I think I would wish that people at that level would turn down that role so that other people would take it. And I wish, I'm a huge Ryan Murphy fan. I mean, how could I not be? He's made so many incredible things, but I'm really, as a fan, I'm definitely really disappointed in this choice. And I think it's going to take a lot more of having this conversation to make that kind of change. And again, the bottom line is, like, I want to experience escapism like everybody else. I want to be swept away into this story, and I couldn't be because it was so insanely distracting.
And there's nothing more that can be said. With that is the close of this conversation. Yes. Tim, where can people, first of all, they have to follow you. I follow you on Instagram, and I think I watch you more than anybody because you always show up immediately on my stories. But again, you just always make me laugh. You always make me smile. So Instagram for sure. I don't even have a Twitter because that's just like a hell that I can't, my nervous system can't handle that. Yeah. But for those of my listeners who do have more of a social media presence, where can people find you?
You can find me at tmurray06, like the numbers 06, on all platforms, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram. I'm on the Twitter. I'm not going to lie. I'm amazing at Twitter. Please, please join me there. And I would love it if you would listen to my podcast. It's now on iHeartRadio Broadway Network. It's called Slumber Party. And I interview comedians, drag queens, and Broadway performers about their slumber party experiences growing up. And it's super fun.
It is super fun. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Tim, and for having this conversation. I like you said, I think it's the kind of conversation we have to keep having.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really, really adore you. You're one of my favorite people in the world, and I'm so glad you're in my life.
Ditto. Thanks, Tim. That was Tim Murray. Be sure to check out voiceandspeechwithryan.com/podcast to find show notes with the links where you can find more information on the topics we discussed, including info on where to find Tim. When you go to my website, be sure to also look under the services tab to find out about my voice and accent classes, which are all online. I'm teaching ongoing voice classes, 10-week intro to Fitzmaurice voice work classes, accent intensives, including one happening on March 7th on received pronunciation, aka Standard British. It's truly never been easier to join a class because you can join from anywhere in the world. So please do check it out. If you like what you heard, please share this podcast. And if you have a suggestion for a question or topic you'd like covered around voice, speech, or presence, you can contact me at voiceandspeechwithryan.com. Until next time, goodbye.